You are listening to the ForceCom Frontline, bringing you to our soldiers on the front lines of readiness.
Hey everyone, welcome to the ForceCom Frontline. I'm Ashley and I'm your host. Joining me today are two leaders from the U.S. Army Air Ambulance Detachment located at Yakima Training Center in Washington State. The mission of the Air Ambulance Detachment is to provide enduring aeromedical evacuation support to Yakima Training Center and, when called upon, to provide defense support to civilian authorities. And I recently saw an article about this unit being called on to help rescue a stranded hiker. And one, I had never heard about this detachment. And two, I thought it was really interesting. So to help us learn a little bit more about their mission, joining me is Major Alec DeGros, Detachment Commander, and Sergeant First Class Adrian Trujillo, Detachment Sergeant. Did I get it right?
Yeah, you did.
Great job.
Now we're going to go with first names from here on out because you just don't want me doing that every time I talk to you, Adrian.
Sounds good.
All right. So thank you both for taking the time to talk with me today. And so before we really get into what the detachment does, could you just each tell us a little bit about yourself, where you're from, how long you've been in the Army, that sort of thing. And we'll go to you first, Alec.
Yeah, of course. And thanks for that awesome intro, Ashley. So I started in the Army and came straight out of ROTC as a 6-7 Juliet, which was an air medical evacuation officer. And so that put me on an immediate path to just being a medevac community once I got on active duty. I've been in for 11 years now. I've been stationed in Fort Wainwright, Alaska, and of course to Fort Knoxville for flight school and for cabin course, and then up here at Yakima for the past 5 years.
You've spent a lot of time in cold weather.
I have, and I grew up in cold weather as well. I learned to thrive in the snow, and I'm all about it.
Where are you from?
I grew up in Billings, Montana.
Oh, yeah. Okay. So you are very used to it.
That's right, yeah.
All right. And what about you, Adrian?
Hey, good morning, Ashley. Thanks for having us again. I'm originally from California. Joined the military in about 2009. I've been in for 15 years.
Okay.
Roughly. Came in as a 68 Whiskey healthcare specialist. Then I reclassed in 2018 as a flight medic. Just kind of wanted to broaden my medical knowledge. So
okay.
Led me to do that. And so, go ahead. Sorry.
No, I don't want to interrupt you. You go ahead.
Yeah. And then before I got to Yakima here, I was stationed in Camp Humphreys, Korea. Unfortunately, it was during COVID, so we're kind of limited on what we're doing at the time.
Okay. So one of the things, and I'm going to catch you off guard here probably, but do you have to come in as a 68 Whiskey to then become a flight medic, or can you come in as a flight medic and just do that from the get-go?
Yeah, so you come in as a 68 Whiskey.
Okay.
And then once they find out, if you had your paramedic before, joined in the military, once they find that information out, it's as simple as sending it to just one additional course, and then you're able to become a flight medic. That's also based upon if you can pass a flight physical, medical screening. But yeah, it's pretty easy if you already have your paramedic license.
Oh, and so that's the thing, a paramedic license. So were you a paramedic in a future life or a previous life, I mean?
No, actually, At the time before joining the military, I was thinking of doing nursing.
Okay.
So I was taking my science classes, and then the college offered an EMT program, which I ended up taking and got my NREMTB, just a basic EMT license to kind of get my feet wet in EMS. And then shortly after that, I started talking to the recruiter and let him know that I wanted to do something medical while I was going to enlist. And then I already had my EMT license, so they were able to work it out where it cut my MOS training down.
Oh.
I think by 6 weeks, so yeah, it helped out having that. But
okay, all right, sorry to focus so much on you and what you're doing, but I just thought it was good. Really interesting, the whole flight medic thing. I think is interesting. But so I briefly mentioned the mission of the detachment. Can you explain it a little bit more, and maybe what defense support to civilian authorities, that mission means, or what it is?
Okay, sure. So it's really not technically our mission, but it is an Army responsibility and overall mission. In a nutshell, what that is just the federal government and military helping out any civilian EMS, or for instance, FEMA, I think Katrina, Sandy, big hurricanes and incidents like that. And so what we do is, as a very small version of that, it falls under search and rescue under Defense Support Civil Authorities, or DISCA for short. So for us, it looks like a sheriff's department or any other entity that's responsible for search and rescue locally, when all of their assets are overwhelmed, they don't have, let's say, volunteers to go find somebody who's injured out in the wilderness, watching from the mountains usually. They can call upon the state, and then they'll call upon federal government for assistance.
Okay. And so what is your, besides that, the mission, day-to-day mission?
Our standard mission here is providing essentially a lifeguard service for the Yakima Training Center.
Okay.
Lifeguard is a company, but I think a lot of people commonly understand that to be a helicopter ambulance service.
Okay. So that makes sense with the flight medic. Probably want them on board. So who makes up your team? If you are called upon for, rescue from the Yakima Training Center or search and rescue, who makes up that team that is going out?
Okay, so our normal crew, an air crew, is going to be two pilots. We have a pilot command and a co-pilot.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have our flight paramedic, and we have a crew chief who's also a rescue boat operator. That's the standard crew. Back at our station, we have flight operations solely, and they are responsible for the radio communications and flight tracking for the mission.
And so is that standard? That's is that any different from what, I mean, you would have? I don't know anything about flying and I don't know the difference between, I don't even know what my question is right now.
I think it's standard for any Army medevac. That is the standard Army medevac air. And you touched on paramedic certifications. There is a path to come in through the Army to become a flight paramedic if you don't already have that paramedic certification.
Right.
The Army does have its own internal paramedic program for San Recent Texas. And so every Army medevac helicopter flying, you'll have at a minimum that three, 50 pilots, paramedic, and crew chief.
Okay.
What you'll see commonly in a lot of environments is a critical care nurse put on board the helicopter, and they're responsible for more of the in route, long term care relief.
Okay. All right. So when you look to build your team for the hoist operations, how do you prepare, or what do you look for when you're building your team, and how do you prepare for missions like a search and rescue, going out and helping to find a hiker, for example?
Yeah, so in regards to the hoist, we do a lot of hoist training here. The Army also has a hoist SOP that we follow, and just getting a lot of reps in, making sure the guys are comfortable. Especially around here, we have a lot of like mountainous type environments,
right?
Where you run into a lot of obstacles. So just being really proficient in hoist operations, and getting those reps and definitely help the guys out. And there are in some instances where we're low on crew chiefs. And we sometimes do like dual medics. So even the medics get a lot of reps operating in the hoist just in case, they need to be, stepping in and acting as a crew chief. One of the short staff sometimes.
Okay. So a lot of training.
I could add to that if you want.
Yes, please.
Okay, sure. So on top of the training, you mentioned briefly the hoist vest that the Army wide as a standard. It's a standard for how we do hoist operations. And so every member of that air crew that I mentioned has a component to that. So for the pilots, we're really focusing on getting our junior aviators the control skills, the ability to keep the aircraft stable to hover. The helicopters we have specifically in Yakima are an older, so UH-60 Lima, which is a little bit older version of the helicopter than was commonly fielded to force. And there's no autopilot. There's no hover hold. It's all pilot skill to keep that steady so we can safely get a paramedic onto the ground and a patient up into the aircraft. So we really focus that. We also focus a lot of emergency response with a hoist and with this general flying aircraft. So we train a lot of rehearsing this emergencies, how to respond to the pilots, how to respond to these, how to communicate as a crew, safety during the operation, specifically voice. So the safety you'd see, we're in the middle of that now, but that was the biggest part I wanted to add to that.
So how often are you all getting called to do a rescue mission or, medevac somebody out?
It's not maybe as frequently as you think. We get only between 10 to 15 missions a year that are out of the bounds of YTC, so underneath the ISCA. And typically, we see a lot of those in the summer months, spring and summer. Once the outdoor enthusiasts have more access to the mountains, hikers,
makes sense.
A lot of hikers, mountain climbers, rock climbers, sometimes mountain bikers. So anything that the season, it's really seasonal, just to let people get out at doors and see a lot of people out there and a few people go there.
That makes sense. How long have you each been with the detachment?
Well, I've been here quite a while, been just over 5 years.
Okay. And what about you, Adrian?
Yeah, I've been here for 3 years.
Okay. Is that kind of like, Have a lot of members or a lot of soldiers on your team been with the detachment for a while?
No, mine was pretty exceptional. A lot of that was because of COVID-19. Typically, this is a 3-year tour for any soul for them.
Okay, fair enough. So you were just talking about, the search and rescue and hoisting. Can you guys share, we're talking about 5 years and 3 years, maybe one of the more memorable positive outcomes from one of the missions that you've been on?
Absolutely. You've got a great one. You're going to brag about it now. Yeah,
so I think it's been a few years now, but I had one call. It was on Mount Stewart, one of the local mountains here. Well, local, if you're flying. But yeah, it was a lady, they're climbing up the mountain and trying to summit it, and she slid down, lost her footing, and then her leg kind of broke her fall, but it also broke her femur.
Oh.
So we got a call. Everything was good for weather, so we headed out, end up picking her up. Yeah, I was hoisted down. I think it was like 50 or 75 feet hoist, but I was hoisted down, did my assessment. The cool thing, she ended up being an ER doc too. So she was also giving me like a little medical rundown of all of all her injuries. We got her safely back up on the helicopter and continued my assessment and got her to the hospital. But she did lose quite a bit of blood. She had to go into surgery. So,
wow.
Yeah.
So when you say femur broken, all I can think about is like the bone popping out of her leg. Was it that catastrophic?
No, it was a closed.
Okay.
Break, so yeah.
I'm picturing picturing the guys running down the basketball court and their leg snaps and that gross stuff.
Adrian won't brag about himself, so I will. But he was recognized as the 2022 Flight Medic of the Year.
That's huge.
All medevac. This is a huge deal for us by an independent nonprofit organization. And so everybody on that crew also got recognized. Pilot of the Year, Crew Chief of the Year, and then overall Mission of the Year for that one incident.
That's amazing.
And it was really, really incredible. And one of the best parts about this is the patient, the woman rode us back. She came to Yakima. We brought her to Yakima on a mission to the hospital here. She was blown by airplane, a fixed wing life flight over to, or other civilian medevac.
Wow.
Over to Spokane, to the hospital there. And I guess she lived in Pacific in Spokane. But anyway, wrote us a letter after the whole thing. Just thanking us. And that's something I kept with our awards display here at the unit as as a reminder of why we exist and why we do it.
Absolutely. Now, do you guys get that a lot, where if you've rescued somebody, if you've helped somebody, that you get to hear like their outcome and hear from them?
Sometimes, not normally. Yeah, a lot of times not, but we have received letters from people in the past, especially with the civilian patients that we have.
Right. Yeah. So you were talking, Adrian, about like the hoist. I guess it's the hoist, and you going down to help the lady. Sorry for my lack of terminology. How do you? I mean, I'm trying to put my question into words, but that training or doing that for the first time, that to me, whenever I watch it on TV, looks extremely frightening. You're swinging all over the place. And I mean, what is that whole experience like, I guess is my question.
Yeah, I kind of fall back like on our training that we do here. And then like, we have a really good group of guys, so I trust everybody from the pilots, like holding that hover, to the crew chief lowering me down on that hoist. So I have a lot of confidence on the crew. That helps out a lot. Then I try not to think too much as I'm going down on the hoist. For that particular call, I actually stayed on the hoist because just the terrain, there was some snow there.
Yeah.
Because if I would have came off that hoist, yeah, it would have been dangerous. So I actually stood on the hoist, getting that patient out of there. But there are some instances where I'm able to be lowered down, unhooked from the hoist, and then the aircraft will take off and come back when I'm ready, or call them back in.
I hadn't even thought about that aspect of, you know, them dropping you off and then circling back when you're ready to go.
Yeah, it helps out as far as like if the patient needs a, if they have injuries that need to be addressed. If the aircraft's just right above you holding that hover, everything's going everywhere. So,
sure.
Yeah, they just drop me off if they can, take off, and then I do what I need to do. And then,
okay.
Yeah, radio back then.
Right. And that's more of a normal way to operate.
Okay.
And we, yeah, for pilots, it's good for us. We can go save fuel. I've had a lot of missions out here where, even with Adrian, drop them off on a mountainside in a safe place.
Sure.
You know, no snow, no ice, good weather, whatever. And I'll go and land and just save fuel because we are typically flying pretty far from the base and we only have so much time to be there around the patient before we have to get going back.
Okay.
Also had missions where I dropped off the paramedics gone all the way back to Yakima to get refuel to fly back out and pick them up. Especially if they need more time for their patient assessment and interventions before they even go with.
Okay. And so is there, I mean, we're talking about the terrain and it's mountainous. Is there special training that the pilots have to do to operate in these conditions?
There's special training that we do.
Okay.
And it's not a requirement, but it's something that as a unit, we really emphasize to build those pilot skills. One formal course that we send a lot of our aviators to is the pilot student aviation training site in Colorado. And that's a week-long course about helicopter power management and flying in the environment. And so our aviators who have gone through that course with the next unit and self-trained those moving aviators, a lot of those same skills. We go into the committee of our training flights to prepare for these conditions.
Okay. And so if you were at a typical medevac unit, how is this different? I mean, I think obviously, besides the obvious, but I assume in this sort of unit, you're doing a lot more real world, hands on sort of thing rather than being in a typical medevac unit. Is that correct to say?
It really depends on which air ambulance unit we're talking about. My time in Alaska, there was a very different unit. That was a deployable air ambulance company with 15 helicopters that had a tactical mission. But when we were stateside in Alaska, we did an almost identical search and rescue type mission that the Yakima does. So I've had experience up there working with the sheriff's departments or other law enforcement who's responsible for search and rescue And yeah, same thing, picking up injured people in the wilderness, in the mountains, hard to reach places up there.
Okay.
It's certainly not typical of other units. I can't speak for a lot of other scientists because I haven't been there personally.
Sure.
I do know that the ports around New York, ports of the Coast Guard, frequently for shoreline water rescues. And so there are some units that do this mission, and a lot of them that I don't know if they know how much of a civilian can follow.
So maybe that's my question. So can a unit at, like, Fort Liberty, for example, be called upon to do this sort of search and rescue thing?
I think the simple answer is yes, based on our national response framework, which is the overall component of the DOD assisting any state or other civilian authorities.
But they're not a unit like you are specifically, like in a detachment like you guys are.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah, there's a couple other detachments similar to us in the active duty army.
Sure.
And a lot of them, there's the rest of the medevac units are the air ambulance company, which has a tactical mission.
Okay. All right. So, I mean, I know that the Army typically tells you where you go for the most part, but Adrian, you said you wanted to be a flight medic. So, you know, when you talk about a rescue mission and being part of a team that, you know, search and rescue, what is part of that that has really stood out to you? Like, why do you enjoy being part of this team so much? I mean, sir, you've been 5 years, Adrian, 3 years. Like, what makes it a little bit different than what you might be doing somewhere else?
Yeah, for me, it's the actual, like, patient contacts, like getting to actually do my job, go out there, provide medical treatment, utilize my skills that the Army has put me through as part of all the training. But the main thing for me is just helping people.
And so I'm assuming even though you are the detachment sergeant, you're still out doing missions.
Yeah, I still get put on the duty schedule. So
okay.
Yeah.
And what about you, sir? Are you still flying missions?
Of course. I mean, same workload of any other aviator when it comes to our time being on call or on the spot.
Okay. And so do you have teams that are on call, or how does that work for, you know, your day-to-day operations? Do you have teams that are on call, or is it just everybody's on call?
Yeah, we do. We have an air crew every day on call, except for some holidays. They were able to take a quick break, but 24/7, most of the year, we have an air crew ready to go.
All right. It's really cool. I don't know. Did either of you ever think when you were starting your Army journey that, you know, being in an air ambulance detachment might be something that you would end up doing?
Yeah, for me, again, I came in as just like a regular 68 whiskey after I completed my AIT training. I did get a little exposure to aviation when I was in Honduras. That's what kind of put that in my head, like, well, maybe I want to go aviation, which just seemed really cool. And then, yeah, they had a lot more patient contacts.
Well, yeah. So you came in just, you were going to be a medic, and then you decided, oh, I guess I'll do it from an aircraft now. <Yeah. laughs> So, but sir, you are a pilot. So, I mean, you knew you wanted to be in an aircraft and fly.
Right. And I'll caveat that with, when I started Army ROTC, I didn't know the Army had helicopters. So I've been surprised to, sign up for ROTC. Oh, there's aviation in the Army. That's neat. Let's try that. And oh, there's this medevac community. So I, you know, chose to go that route because I liked the sound of that mission and, expected to go to a deployed environment with a medevac company, which I did. And came back stateside and like, oh, we do this search and rescue mission as well. Well, that's really neat. Where else can I do that in the Army? So that's what led me to come out to Yakima in the first place. And like you, I think myself and most people, even in Army aviation, don't know what exists.
No.
So I was lucky enough to work with somebody who had been stationed here before. And that's how I found out about it when I was in Alaska.
It was a mission from October. I don't know the details. Maybe you know what I'm talking about. There was an article on Army.mil recently rescuing a hiker. And I was just like, huh, how about that? I did not know there was like an air ambulance detachment. No quotes needed.
Yeah, the Army has, so they have us, the air ambulance detachment, and then you have the air ambulance company. I mean, you think of the air ambulance company, that is the... in a deployed environment, they're doing what we do at the ACMA Training Center, but for soldiers who are in combat versus the injuries we see at the training center versus training exercise.
So if I am a soldier who is a flight medic or a medevac pilot, is this something that I could say, hey, I'm really interested in being part of this this search and rescue air ambulance team? Or is it just, I gotta hope I get really lucky?
I was able to come here sort of by happenstance. I knew about it, and I had quite a few discussions with my assignment manager at the time to come here. So it wasn't totally chance, although we do have some people, some soldiers who are assigned here who've never heard of us and have no idea where we are. They show up and go, hey, this is kind of cool. Yeah.
Well, and the reason I even ask is I am sure that there are people in the civilian world who do search and rescue, who have an interest in search and rescue, but like we've said, have no idea that this is something that the Army actually does as well. And so just thinking if there's somebody out there listening who is interested in the Army, interested in wanting to do something like this, what their path might be. But it sounds like, you know, coming in as a medic or a medevac pilot, and then for the enlisted side, getting over to the flight medic and then seeing where things go.
And I think for those individuals, if they came in with the mindset of, I want to do the Army's medevac mission, and they might be fortunate enough to be stationed in a unit that has a civilian assistance component to it, like here in Alaska.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be if somebody really wanted to do just search and rescue, this probably wouldn't be the fastest path for them to do that.
But yeah. There's always possibilities in the Army, right?
It exists. It can happen. Right. And you know, we see bigger examples of this. You might not really think too much on it, but I think go back to Hurricane Katrina again in 08, and you saw units from, for sure, Savannah, Georgia, hoisting their civilians off of people's rooftops during those floods during that hurricane.
Right.
That, what we do, falls under the same ISCA as what the unit out of Savannah did for Hurricane Katrina.
Yeah, no, that's a great example.
So Army-wide, there is absolutely a chance in a unit you can have some sort of impact on a community and on a country, on a civilian impact. Yeah. It doesn't have to just be certain rescue from a lot of different ways.
All right. So, sir, Adrian told us his memorable story, but I don't think you shared one. Do you have one?
Oh gosh, I get a lot of missions here, and not just being here for 5 years, but I think the one in October you referenced, that would have been one of mine. It was early October, and this was one where we dropped off a flight paramedic using voice. We were in very close to where Adrian had his mission, so it's a common recreational area. And so we dropped off for medic through a big gap and some trees up there. The trees in Washington State get a couple hundred feet tall, sometimes 3 feet. So we're doing a 100-foot hoist. Meanwhile, the helicopter's maybe 10 feet above the tree tops. And so we dropped off for medic. This woman had the injured subject, the patient, had fallen into a rock pile. I think she was taking some photos and sort of fell backwards. injured back and hip. And so he needed a lot of time on the ground to get a really good assessment of her condition and then really what we call package, or just put the patient on his spine board and into our flexible litter system to get her into the aircraft. And so the pilot and I decided to drop him off, fly to the nearest airport, shut down, get fuel, and then fly all the way back out to go pick up the medic and patient. And the timing and everything worked out really well. But there's, you know, a good example of a cruise. The crew is doing some planning before we leave as much as we can, as much information as we can get from our requester, which is typically the sheriff's department, close by.
Sure.
And to get information, and as we go into that mission, we're just developing what's happening around us and then making that decision, like, okay, medic needs more time, let's go get fuel. This gives us a buffer, a safety buffer, as if we came back, pick them up. And get the woman ultimately back to the ECMO hospital for continued recovery.
All right.
But, you know, we asked the woman, Adrian stayed on the hoist in his mission. I've had a few of those on other mountains here in Washington where we lower a flight medic down as snow or ice on a slope, and they're not coming off the hoist clip because they are attached to the thing. It's redundant. It's probably safer than what it looks like from a distance. People who aren't familiar with all of the safety and the standardization that goes into that operation.
All right. And so are the medics mostly operating alone on the ground?
Sometimes. They're expected to be able to.
Okay.
And many times, you know, for our YTC mission, we're going to have an Army unit that we're responding to anyway. So we have extra hands to help carry a litter, for instance. Sometimes a medic, another 60 who's with that requesting unit to help do a patient assessment, help package the patient. With a search and rescue component, a lot of the rescuers, especially mountain rescue, they're trained in some level of medical care, whether that's a wilderness first aid, wilderness first responder, all the way up to some of the volunteers I personally know are ER docs. So you can have a big span of capability when we put a flight medic on the ground. For his mission, he had no help other than the patient herself was in key heart
down. Right.
And, for mine, we had a whole team of search and rescue people there with at least two nurses to help out. But no matter who's there, whether it's volunteers or sheriff's department personnel, our flight medic still has medical authority on them. That's their patient.
Well, that's interesting. All right. Well, we are going to run out of time. But is there anything that you want to just mention before I let you guys go that we haven't discussed that you think is important to mention?
Let's see. I think for mine, if you are interested in the military, give it a try. Come in with an open mind, work hard, and see where it takes you. Open doors and, metaphorical doors, and see what you can do. Really find your potential, and I think you might, as an individual, surprise yourself what we're capable of.
I think that's a great message. What about you, Adrian?
I think you summed it up pretty well. But those interested in doing the flight medic thing, whether you're not in the military yet or in the military as a regular 68 whiskey right now. It's definitely a very rewarding field. You get a lot of cool training out of it. And the best part of it, you get to help people and save lives too. So,
these are probably pretty cool helicopters, pretty cool places.
Well, that's pretty awesome. All right. Well, again, thank you both for taking the time to talk with me. It was great to learn more about what you guys do. And I hope our listeners learned something that, like I said, I didn't even know about, and I've worked for the Army for 15 years. So I think it's pretty awesome. I think it's great what you guys are doing. And again, thank you for taking the time to talk with me.
Thank you, too. Thanks for reaching out, and I appreciate your time as well.
Yeah, absolutely. That's it for this episode. You can find us on Facebook, Twitter, and Instagram, and you can also find full video episodes of our podcast on YouTube. You can just search for the Force Comm Frontline, and we'll see you next time on the Frontline.